It's hard to believe how some weeks just fly by. They just whip by. And some weeks really take forever to get to hump day. This is one of those weeks that just fly by. It's inconceivable that it's Thursday, but I'm glad it is because I'm here. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on Progressive Radio Network. Lots of great things to talk about today, if I can think of some. Oh, I just thought of one. We're going to have a guest today. She's in studio. She's wearing a very cool t-shirt that belongs to her. She didn't bring a spare. One for her interviewer, but that's okay. She only lives about three blocks away from our Midtown Manhattan studio, so I'm sure after the interview she'll run home and get one. To speak about her organization, this was a life-changing trip for her when she turned the young age of 21. Maybe it was an older birthday. She went to explore around the world, and she came back a changed woman. And a changed woman who is changing the lives of tens and tens of thousands of people in Africa. And that's a great thing. We're going to meet her in just a few minutes. But before we get to that, let's talk about like something very, very sad and morose. Charles Manson has one foot in the grave. But I can't wait for him to have 2 feet in the grave. How do you feel about that? Charles Manson. He was like ahead of the curve in terms of like mass murderers. Is there a curve for mass murderers? I don't know. So with Facebook Live, I think we got to start doing some product placement here. Right? Especially now that we're Facebook Live. A lot of hair product going on here. So we got to start, Jesse, program director, we can start getting some sponsors, some men care hairstyle products. Because, you know, you can't move this with a blowtorch or one of those leaf blowers. Speaking of leaf blowers, this summer I actually did this, and hope no one in Dyfus is listening. I put those hearing protection things on my son's ear and goggles. I kid you not. I put them right in front of the pool. This is all, we talked about this. And I have a really powerful leaf blower because I have a big lawn. I started up and I said, "You ready?" He goes, "I'm ready." So his eyes were protected. His ears were protected. And I fired up and I shot him right in the pool. He just tipped over. Not like he got shot out of a cannon or anything. Anyway, I digress. So, one of the things that Trump did to piss me off yesterday, there was only one actually. So I was actually pretty surprised. He rolled back something that Obama had implemented, the elephant trophy hunting and shipping back of animal parts. So Trump said, "Nah, I don't like that because I guess my millionaire friends still like to hunt elephants and tusks." And he said no. And so that regulation hunting will be benefiting all his friends. And it got rolled back. It's really a shame because I really think that a lot of it had to do with obviously. Okay. A person in middle class, can they go over to a country like Africa and hunt elephants and pay for that trip, the safaris? I mean, it's not cheap. And to also have, I don't know if they have, what's the taxidermist, if you are actually doing that act over there, and how that gets done, I don't even want to think about that, but it gets done. That's what was happening for a long time. But Trump says no, and this will regulate hunting, and it will benefit the conservation of elephants. I can't figure that one out. I got to wrap my head around that a little bit more. I think this is a Trumpism. Somebody wrote it for him, and maybe he misinterpreted. But that's what he said. He said it's going to help the conservation of elephants by lifting this ban. So anyway, so on Monday night, I had the great pleasure of hosting the 12th annual Laugh for Sight. And Laugh for Sight is an event that's held here in New York City at Gotham Comedy Club on 23rd Street. And Gotham Comedy Club is one of the premier comedy clubs in New York City. It's been around for, I think, 18 years or so. And Brian Fischler is the founder and president and comedian. And he started this to benefit and educate and raise critical funds for degenerative retinal diseases. Now, those three words don't sound too hard to say, right? Degenerative retinal diseases, and they're not. But have a few cocktails. And it's hard. So I'm up there on stage as a host. For 12 years I've been doing it. Really, really embracing this event because it's just, as a speaker, when I'm in schools or corporations, I share my story about being visually impaired and all the things that happened to me. And depending on the audience and where I'm at, whether it's an audience filled with persons with disabilities or persons with visual impairments or people who are blind. But for the most part, it's mostly mainstream, and about 40 are persons with disabilities. So, but when I'm in this climate on a stage, with alcohol around me, people are imbibing, it's a whole different rush. Like, it's a thrill to speak at schools and colleges. It's rewarding and gratifying to speak at corporations and share my stories. But when you're on a stage at Laugh or Sight, it's a little intimidating, mind you, because we're going to talk about some of the comedians like Robert Klein. I mean, these guys are icons. And here's this snotty-nosed little punk kid, Mark Farrell. Well, no, I mean 51, but in comic years, I guess I'm young. Yeah, I'm probably like 12. here I am, but I get to go up on stage and I get to talk about, you know, my trials and tribulations of living with a visual disability, and why people need to give money and why people need to experience what people who are blind or visually impaired do. So I implored people to drink themselves blind on Monday night because I said it's going to be short term. You're going to have a hangover, but tomorrow morning your vision's going to be 20/20 or whatever it is. So give money, drink up. There was free Patron, all kinds of Patron products for the first hour and a half. Sounds enticing, right? It really is a great event. And some of the comedians that were there this particular week was Robert Klein, Jim Norton, Eddie Brill. Allie Klein is the son of Robert Klein. And Allie is, he's got it going on, man. He's got interpretations, he's got regionalisms, he's got good skits, he's really, really clever. Now, Michelle Wolf, she was, I guess, like the second lineup in terms of the hierarchy of comedians there. And she was good, her content was really good. But she did one of these voices that I thought maybe for a woman comic was maybe something that was necessary in the 70s. Maybe in the Lily Tomlin era, that would be in the 70s, right? Because she kind of gravitated more towards acting. But she kind of had this really annoying accent and talk like that. I'm not doing it justice, but that was annoying, right? So it was annoying for her, from her, on a different par. And I looked at this, my friend, who is Maria Melito. She is a great, great DJ at Q104, the New York rock station here, the world's best rock station, and my co-host for the last 2 or 3 years at Laugh or Sight. And I looked at her, I'm like, does she really sound like that? She says, no. I'm like, why does she put on that affectation? It's not funny. She doesn't need to do that. She's a woman comedian. People embrace that. Even Harvey Weinstein would embrace that. Who knows? Actually, and we'll get to that in a bit. But she was good. Her irritating voice has to go, though. And just a lot of great current events that were brought into it. And I want to play you a piece of one of the things I get to do there is I have a blank canvas. I'm there before the event starts for an hour and a half. People are drinking, having a good time. We have silent auction items. We're pushing different events, obviously trying to raise more and more money. And, of course, make people laugh now and then. Here's a sample of that.
My version of assistive technology was a large print dictionary that was about 3 feet high and about 12 inches wide. The New Jersey Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired came up to me and said, Mark and Mrs. Farrell, that was my wife back then, that was my mom, this is going to revolutionize your son's life. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm going to be the target of bullies. So that's where assistive technology started. And this, my friends, is where it's coming.
Yeah!
Woo! Woo! Nice.
I am not Arnold Schwarzenegger. I am Mark Farrell, wearing a revolutionary product called Ira. Ira works like, well, the table of Ira is in the back. Ira, folks, yes. So, I am looking at, a great set of, and there's a camera here, and there's something in my ear that's telling me what I'm seeing, because I have Wi-Fi connection, and there's someone connected to me somewhere in maybe upstate New York, Jersey, Alabama, that's telling me what a bodacious set of, I'm seeing right now. Isn't that great technology? Great. So you can, you know, walk around the city. Brian Fisher, the founder of Laugh or Sight. Let's hear it for Brian Fisher. He is a walking testament to how much he loves these. I do not have these, but I am not going to relinquish these because I love this set of that I'm looking at. So this is technology. This is how far it's come. Nobody wants to be disabled. But I always say when I speak at schools and colleges that there's never been a time to be disabled. So we're making progress because of benefits like this, because of critical funds that are raised. So we thank you. Thank you for your time on Monday Night Guys. Example of how this works. So, for example, if I'm walking down the street and I pause for a second and I say to myself, I want to go to the circus. So, I'm holding in my hand a phone. So, the person who's picking up GPS on their receiver there goes, okay, Mark wants to go to the circus. Navigate to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. See how that works? I think they got a few quirks in the system. How about forget traveling. Traveling's overrated. I'm gonna get laid. I mean, come on, every blind person wants to get laid. Everybody wants to get laid. Blind, sighted, hearing impaired, whatever, right? Give a round of applause for wanting to get laid.
Yeah.
Very good. I'm glad they challenged yourself. Okay, I relayed that, and now they're giving me directions. Okay. Ding dong.
Hello.
Thank you. Shit. I'm at the door of Harvey Weinstein's house. Oh my God. Come on now. There's got a few quirks to be worked out. So we're here for a great cause tonight. There are real comedians up next, not me. My name is Mark Crowell. Thank you so much for coming each and every year to Laugh for Sight, especially this year when it's actually cold out in autumn. Ladies and gentlemen,
so that's a sample of one of the shticks I did on Monday night in Gotham City, right here at Gotham Comedy Club with Brian Fisher, and he is the founder and president, as I mentioned. He got up there and he hit it out of the park. He has been doing comedy for, I don't know, maybe 15 years or so. He's a great writer, a gifted comedian, and just a guy who is spearheading a lot of different avenues and trails in his life. He's blind, has great dog Nash. Actually, it's his guide dog slash like drinking buddy. Actually, when I first started out hosting these events, I said, well, this year is, you know, Laugh for Sight and Nash and Brian's engagement party. Because, you know, they've been with each other for so long. They've been kind of dating. And I know Brian told me he's into bestiality. And I won't go any further. But that's where it kind of started from. And that's where we went to. But it was kind of cool. A lot of great organizations there. My Blind Spot. Albert Rizzi, the founder of My Blind Spot, which is a great organization. He bought a table. And Patron, a lot of great people there. And they're good. The trips were to Bali, to Italy. I mean, the raffles, the Patron baskets were crazy. I was like saying to people, listen, if you're having people over, if you're hosting for Thanksgiving, get it, because your guests are going to need it, but you're going to need it even more so because, you know, hosting that many people. But as I was mentioning during that little bit, it's a little hard to maybe decipher possibly because of the live room ambience, and also it's recorded via an iPhone about 50 feet back from the stage, that there's new technology that I demonstrated. And when we roll this back on the archives, you may be able to insert the actual video feed from that you'll see me wearing glasses. And when you wear these glasses called IRA, it's called AIRA, and I don't know the acronym, but it's IRA. And there is a little speaker in the earpiece, and it says to you, say, Jackie is saying to me, hi, my name's Jackie. I'm located in Bethesda, Maryland, and I'm here to direct you today. Because if I was using a smartphone, I would plug in and call IRA. Now, I would either have this phone up to my ear or have earbuds in, and I'd say to IRA, this is one of the jokes I did not do, and I can use it here because it's not a live audience, so it doesn't go over. It's not like there's going to be crickets. So I was going to say, I want to travel. I've never seen a pyramid. Take me to a pyramid. And then Jackie, located in Oshkosh or whatever, would say, okay, take 20 steps to your right, because she's using GPS to map this technology, and cross the street, whatever, direct me to Newark International Airport or whatever the scenario would be. And the joke would be, and next thing you know, I'm ringing Craig Carton's doorbell. Craig Carton was the former talk show host of the morning show FAN, and he got arrested about 2 months ago for a Ponzi and pyramid scheme. So I don't know how many folks are in a pyramid scheme kind of. So I didn't use that joke. I decided not to. But it is a clever joke. But he did actually co-host it with me for 2 years as well. So I was kind of like teetering on, like, do I bring this into the mix? I mean, what if the guy for some reason buys the jury because, you know, he confiscated so much money, you know, he got off. So maybe he can buy his way out of it. Next, you know, next year I'm hanging out with Craig Carton backstage going like, oh, shit, I wonder if he found out if I was making fun of him. But leave it to Brian Fischler, the founder of the Laffer site. He came out ripping and roaring against Craig Carton. So I was happy about that. Anyway, so this technology is really, really interesting. If you know somebody who's visually impaired or blind, check out AIRA, AIRA. And I believe they're a German or an Israeli company. I am going to contact them and get them on a show because it's really a fascinating device. Besides the different humor that we can incorporate into the show, it's just a fantastic device. So from the How Cool Is This Files, remember Tears for Fears? Yeah, how could you not? Shout, Let It Out. What's another great song, Jackie? Everybody Wants to Rule the World. I mean, there was a great, great album that came out. And it was one of the 80 bands that has not made, Backstreet Boys. Is it 90 Degrees? What's that band called? It's another boy band. Anyway, they've all made comebacks. And finally, after years, this pop funk band from the 80s is out with a new album, two new tracks, and a bunch of the old ones remastered, and sonically it sounds amazing. Here's a piece of one of their new tracks. So there we go. New Tears for Fears on PRN.FM. Your source for music, and progressive talk. How about that? 19 minutes after the hour of noon in New York City. Make that 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Farrell. Love to hear from you always at mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. My next guest is very interesting on several levels. She has a huge heart and a capacity for endless giving, and certainly her biggest focus in life right now is education. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show Jacqueline Wolfson, who we met online. Usually that's one of those sentences like when you say, I met this person online, usually doesn't have a good ending. This has a great ending, and Jacqueline's story is just amazing. Come on closer to the mic.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
My pleasure, my pleasure. So this all started. You're a foundation called the Shul Foundation, which is Swahili for
schools, and it's actually pronounced shule.
You know, I was wondering about that after I sent you an email. I said I should probably get the phonetic spelling on that pronunciation. So you went on your 40th birthday.
You weren't supposed to tell anybody that.
I know, but you look so damn good and young. And guess what? I got 10 years on you, girl, easily. So I'm going to expose somebody who's 10 years younger than me, and you look damn good. I have no, you know, regrets about doing it. So tell us about this epiphany.
So it was a place I've always wanted to go to, and I just decided it was a big birthday, and so we might as well celebrate it in a big way.
Las Vegas, not South Beach. Africa.
The continent of Africa. Mm-hmm. And so I took off for 3 months, and I did 6.5 weeks on safari and decided I was going to do 6.5 weeks charity work. Something I had never done before. I've never done any charity, never volunteered. I never even went camping. And so I kept telling all my friends, I'm going to go live in a village somewhere with no electricity or running water. And everybody thought, there's no way she's going to last.
You packed everything into one felt swoop.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Good for you. So now, what was the giving aspect? Something you never had time for, or something that as a New Yorker, and I'm not, you know, reflecting on you, but a lot of New Yorkers can be selfish. Because we live in our own little worlds and our, YouTubes and Facebook and, every platform possible. And there's plenty of generous and giving people out there. But was that a time in your life you felt that there's so much change and you wanted to look back and possibly move forward in a positive way?
To be honest, no.
You never thought about it that much.
No, I actually didn't. I just thought, I'm going to go over there. Let me do something different. It just never was a calling. I never thought I was put on this earth to do bigger and better things or to make a difference. It just became part of the plan.
That's neat. It's almost like a travel brochure that didn't exist, but you made it happen.
Mm-hmm.
So you were there for about 24, 48 hours, and either you emailed somebody or you spoke to somebody and you're like, this place is not for me. I want to leave.
I called up a friend who's a mentor, and I called him and I said, what was I thinking? I think maybe everyone was right. There's no way I can stay here. It was hot. It was dirty. I had gone to the continent looking for that Africa that people show you. The starving babies, protruding bellies, everyone's poor, everyone's begging.
The 3 a.m. infomercials.
Yes, and prior to that, the trip started Botswana, South Africa, and Namibia. And South Africa and Namibia, when you're in the major cities, does not reflect the Africa that you see on these infomercials.
A lot of misconceptions.
Huge misconceptions. But then even Uganda was a misconception because I didn't see much of that either. But I just, being in this village, waking up and realizing I'm going to be bathing in a basin, there's barely no electricity, all this kind of stuff. I was like, maybe I got myself in too deep. So I called him. He asked, what would I do? I told him, I raised $5,000 to do something for this orphanage I was going to volunteer at. I could go see the gorillas. So he said, okay. And I love this man so much because he's non-judgmental. He said, but I think you should give it a little more time. So I said, okay, fine. So I gave it. The next day, I went to the orphanage where I would be volunteering. And I met these amazing kids. And I called him back the day after. And he said, so what's the verdict? I said, I'm not sure if I'm ever coming home now. So it's just, something clicked. The kids were...
What was special about the kids?
The kids are incredible. This particular place where I was volunteering was horrible. There probably are places that are worse than this place. But for my initial entry into sort of what goes on in some of these orphanages, it was a lot. You had about 180 kids living in an L-shaped building with four rooms. They were sleeping on the ground. Most of them had ringworm. Most of them looked like they didn't even eat. And yet they had smiles on their faces, and they're just so endearing. And they're all talking to you. And when you're white, they come and they pet you. They get fascinated by your veins. And they're like, they look at their hands as if they don't have them. And I found these little kids, they would start to lick me. Okay. And then the other ones would be petting my hair. But it was just...
Well, you're an anomaly.
Yeah. So, and you find out kids in the village, they do that to most whites that come. But there was just something that clicked, and I thought, I might be where I'm supposed to be.
Was it the patting of the arm or the licking of the arm?
I think it might have been licking of the arm. That actually was like...
Now, was this in the slum region?
No, it actually wasn't. It was in a place called Iganga, which is, in our terms, it's somewhat of a bigger city. It's on the route that comes from Kenya into Kampala. So it's a pretty big area, but it has a lot of poverty.
Was there education? Were these kids that you initially met going and attending school?
Well, the family I was staying with, the kids were going to school. These kids were being taught at the orphanage, as we can say. But this place, there was a hidden story there. we ultimately found out that each kid at the place was actually sponsored by maybe three or four different organizations, and the woman running the organization, her and her husband and sister, were pocketing all the money. Turned out to be a very horrible, horrible.
Is this something you unearthed, or you just discovered while you were there?
Well, no, what happened was there was some girls that had gotten there before me, and they started sort of inquiring. And then we all sort of just picked up the ball, and then after about a year and a half of investigating, we realized what was going on.
So I imagine Swahili is something you didn't study in college.
No, and it's actually not really the language of Uganda either.
It's not.
No, it's an East African, it's based in, people in Kenya speak it, people in South Africa speak it, and it is spoken in East Africa, but
different dialects.
But in Uganda, you know, the national language is actually English, which is surprising.
Which is welcoming for you.
Yes, it is, but not very many people speak it. And then you have Luganda, and then I do believe there's about 147 different dialects and different
languages.
Wow, it's
like
languages.
India.
Yes,
mm-hmm. That's incredible.
It's very incredible.
That people within a country, 147 different dialects.
Yes.
How can that exist?
They figure it out because you usually have somebody in the mix who knows.
Oh, sure.
Who knows
it was more of a rhetorical statement, but it's just.
But it fascinates me.
It is fascinating.
It totally fascinates me.
Yeah, because my mother-in-law, they are Sikh, and they speak Punjab.
Okay.
But, I mean, all the different variations in India, it's just mind-boggling.
Yes, and some people don't understand
sure.
the other ones.
You can be an hour away from each other and not understand each other.
And not be able to communicate.
So tell me about how you discovered more of Africa and the slums and the poor kids that were sniffing glue on a daily basis because it was at their fingertips.
Yes. So last year, usually over the last couple of years, we would do a Christmas party. And a friend of mine sent me a photo of a boy that just captured my attention.
This is here in the States.
This is here in the States, but he's Ugandan, and he sent me this photo. And it was they were going to do a project in the slum. And so after looking at the photo, I decided, oh, let's do our Christmas party in the slum. So last year, when I went in December, I went a couple days before our actual Christmas party because someone else was doing an event there. And met these remarkable, remarkable kids, funny and really intelligent. Because when you're a street kid, you have to grow up really fast.
Street smarts,
yes.
Big time.
Yes.
Whether here in the States, New York City, or in Uganda.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking to a 10-year-old, and you actually think you might be talking to an 18-year-old.
Wow.
Because they have to be really
speed of their development,
really clever.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, the fascinating thing, which I was sort of when I first appear, you see these kids walking around with a bottle, a plastic bottle under their nose, or they constantly have their hands under their nose.
With a, is it like a tissue or a handkerchief?
It's a cloth. And in the bottle, it's the combination of airplane fuel and industrial glue. And they mix that.
My.
And there's this woman who sells it. And there was actually this man who had come in a while back and had tried to strike a deal with her and said, listen, I will just give you the money. Stop selling this stuff to the kids. It's just crazy.
Now, this has been an epidemic for years,
yes,
correct?
Yes. And
safely almost a decade?
Oh, it has to be.
Yeah.
It has to be. And it just doesn't happen in Uganda. It's sort of a big drug of choice.
Opioid crisis in Uganda.
Yeah, but not even Uganda, in slums. It's just sort of the drug of choice.
Cheap is it?
Because it's really cheap.
It's ubiquitous. Pennies.
But now for us, it's cheap. For them, it's not cheap. For them, it's the equivalent. It's 200 shillings.
How long does that high last?
Well, that's the interesting thing is they sniff until they sleep. So they are constantly, constantly high. Yes. And as you talk to them, you learn what it is about sniffing. Besides the fact that it's cheap, they tell you it gives them a warming sensation throughout their bodies, which helps them to be able to sleep on the ground at night because they're sleeping outside, and most of them don't have blankets. They actually, if you do a night outreach, you can walk through Kampala and you'll come across these tarp bags, and you'll think, oh, somebody just threw their garbage in the park, and inside is a body. It's a kid, but yet
alive
kid
sleeping.
Who's sleeping in this bag. and they barely have any clothes. So it helps them to keep warm, suppresses their appetites, because they scavenge for food and they don't, they're not guaranteed meals a day. And then...
Oh, this is heart-wrenching.
One of the kids, Ashraf, who looked at me and he started to laugh and he says, "And it, Auntie, it makes us forget." He says, "'Cause would you want to remember this life?" And you just kind of go, hmm. So it's really incredible. And what we're trying to truly even figure out is what's that impact of this 10-year-old kid who's now been sniffing for like 3 years, 4 years.
What's exactly 10 years from there? I mean, there's got to be a lot. I mean, it sounds like it's probably slowing down the central nervous system, a lot of bodily functions, and the brain damage.
Yes, yes. And so we are, we're looking, we've been talking to a university here about the possibility of grad students going over there and sort of doing some research, because we can help them, which is what we're doing. But if some of the stuff, you know, some of our kids, they seem to be bipolar or they suffer from depression, but it's been hard to get them properly diagnosed. And we'd like to know what the impact of the sniffing of petrol has really done.
And so this is, as you mentioned, out in the open. So officials cracking down on this, or it's just rampant?
It's just rampant. The sad thing about these kids, so we call the kids that we work with, we call invisible. Because they're not the kids that you'll see begging on the street. They're not selling products. They're not trying to wash your windshield. These kids actually stay within the confines of the slum, and they keep themselves hidden. So we call them invisible. But the law enforcement there will go in and just crack down on them, and they'll beat them, and they'll just round them up and throw them into prison.
And how long will they remain there? And is that a better alternative?
No.
Living in prison?
No.
Violence?
They'll stay there for as long as they can. Most of them sneak themselves out.
You can sneak yourself out of a jail.
Yes.
Wow.
But and then they'll also, I think what they'll do is after time, sometimes they just let them out as well.
Because they're youth.
Yeah, because they're youth.
Yeah. And it's not like they can pony up the fee to get out.
Right.
Wow. All right. So we had a little bit of a digression there, because the component of your organization is about education. But still, it's good to get a macro snapshot. We spoke before about misconceptions. We'll delve a little bit more into that later. But the education component is what your driving force is for Shule?
For Shule, yes.
Shule.
Yes.
Your foundation.
Yes.
Which was started 7 years ago?
No, actually, it's official in 2014.
In 14. And that's your phone. That's Uganda calling. See? You were just needed.
I know, but I thought I shut it off, so I apologize.
Yeah, you're one of those. Every audience I speak in front of, there's always one or two or three of you. Anyway,
so yes.
And there's one particular boy who really got a hold of your heart.
Yes.
And you promised him something. Tell us about that story, please.
So there was this boy named Ashraf who he and I got very, very close in a very short period of time. And when I was back there in about April, I just watched this kid disintegrate before my eyes. These kids have no muscle mass. Their bodies look like they've been battered. And Ashraf has this contagious smile, but it just seemed to be vanishing. And so towards the end of that particular trip, I said to him, "I'm getting you off the street." I don't know what that means, but I'm getting you off the street.
So you didn't have a plan or an answer?
I had no plan.
You had to give him hope.
I don't even know if I was trying to give him hope. I just couldn't take watching this kid live this life. And so because Shule wasn't formed to take care of street kids or take kids off the street or any of that kind of stuff. So it was a big thing when I got home and started talking to people, and everyone's like, "But you're going off mission, right?" Everyone's worried when it comes to nonprofits. Everyone's worried about mission. But I made this promise to this kid, and I found out this kid reads. This kid is very smart, and that was sort of the trigger part. One day he had my phone, and he was reading a message that I had written to my attorney, and I was like, "What? How does this kid know how to read?"
Fantastic.
So that even made it even worse, because I'm like, this really smart kid, this is being wasted. This is wasted. So came home and just decided we needed to find a home. We're going to need staffing. We're going to need food. And that was sort of just as far as the thinking went. Some beds.
And how old was he at that point?
So Ashraf is 14.
Then or now?
Now. So because this
particular. Oh, just happened this past April.
This particular program. So Shule was official in 2014. And our. Watoto Matani, which means street kids in Swahili, program is very new.
I like the way you just roll that off your tongue there.
I've been practicing. Jacqueline,
very good.
I've been practicing.
Very impressive.
You have to practice because you got to say these things
exactly.
Right. We just opened our facility this past July.
Fantastic. Your facility.
Yeah. So we rented a home.
Yeah. How many bedrooms?
It's an 11-bedroom home. It's on an acre and a half of land.
Great.
We have two kitchens. They have this whole outdoor place to run. And we rented it in July. And at the end of July...
All different families? I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yes. And so at the end of July, we moved our first group of 27 kids in.
Now, if they have parents, are they allowed to be visited by parents or are they strictly living alone?
This is the cool and interesting thing. They all have parents. Every one of our kids has parents. So, and that's one big part of the program is for us to map where they come from. Now, the story you get when the kid first comes off the street, and now the story we have now,
completely different.
Very big disconnect. Mm. But
because they don't want to be found?
You know what? It's funny because I think that is. They don't want to be found. I think also, too, they quickly learn, how do I pull on the emotions of a white so they can get new clothing, I can get food, mm-hmm. and I can do all of this. So
those big smiles.
So they tell you this repetitive story. You know, every mm-hmm. kid mixes
sure.
it up just a little bit.
Heartbreaking.
But it ultimately comes down to the same story. And it makes you sad. And you're like, oh, let me go and buy you something. Let me do this. And they're very smart. They know exactly how to play you. So they move in, and the first 6 weeks was, I have to say, hell on
so
wheels.
You're there for this now.
I was there for this. I stayed in that home every single day for the first 2.5 months. But the kids were, because you wean them off of the glue, and next thing you know, they have to deal with reality.
So are you doing this under the confines of your roof?
So we're doing this under the home. So
we
physically move 27 kids off the street and into our home.
So now it's almost like a drug recovery center.
It is.
So
much.
And you don't have a degree in that area either.
I don't, but we have. But I had social workers,
great
psychologists. There's a nurse.
Fantastic,
there's a doctor.
Jacqueline.
There's a house mother. We have a warden, and we have lots and lots of amazing.
Was it easy to secure all these people?
No. And we have
volunteerism.
And they're paid. Most of the staff is paid, but we have some amazing volunteers who most are former street kids themselves, who are now adults.
Great role models. Fantastic.
One is an amazing movie maker. He has two movies that are now in lots of festivals.
You're kidding me.
Oh, yeah. We have another one who runs.
Can you tell us the name of one of these movies?
One is The Little Ghetto Project.
About his hometown?
No. Well, it's about sort of ghetto life.
And what's his name?
His name is, we call him Ness.
Okay. But we'll put this online so people can,
you
know,
so you can check out George Stanley's movies.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah. He's amazing. Just amazing. We have this other guy, JB, who is also a former street kid. This man has such compassion and love for these kids. He and I do our resettlements together, and it's just extraordinary. And then we have this gentleman, Patrick, who was also on the street. He's now our educator. He's back at university. He got his degree in teaching. He's going back to the equivalent of his master's, and he's helping us teach English and math to our kids. So it's been really incredible.
Thank God you turned 40.
I know. Thank God.
Look at all the people who have benefited from this.
Thank God.
Jacqueline Wilson,
yes.
This is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Could you have ever imagined?
No.
Theorize that, you know, for, you know, something on a whim, you're going to go out here and do this. And it turns out that you come back to New York City. And it's actually, I was thinking about after we met and spoke, that there's a real parallel to what you do professionally outside of the Shule organization. It's a service you provide.
Yes.
And many would determined a service that they couldn't live without, which, you know, is not the case. A concierge service is not something you can live without. It certainly makes our life easier. But here you are providing an imperative, significant service to give people life, a clean life, and education and shelter. I mean, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Yeah, more eye-opening than that.
So, and every day I wake up and I'm like, really? Is this my life?
So that is your purpose. I mean, you didn't know it, but
I didn't know it, but yeah. It now all of a sudden became.
It's amazing how things just kind of are bestowed upon us, or we just kind of walk into these situations.
But going back to what you said about the kids not wanting to be found, the interesting thing about Ashraf is when we found his mother, we kept calling him Ashraf. And the mother finally said to JB, why are you calling him Ashraf? And so JB's like, why are we calling him? I'm like, that's his name. And she's like, no, his name is Jeremiah Joshua.
Sounds like a movie star.
So I'm like, okay. So I looked at him and I said, will you ask her, are they Muslim? And she's like, no, we're Christian. And I said, okay. So we have Ashraf, the Muslim, because he keeps telling us he wants to go to mosque. And yet now he's Jeremiah Joshua, who's actually Christian. So these kids are so smart to know how to take on a whole new identity so that they can't be found.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
Because you're smart.
They are
smart.
Again,
you have to do what you need to do to survive, whether it's in the streets of Philadelphia, Detroit,
anywhere.
Or Uganda. My guest is Jacqueline Wilson. She is the founder and CEO of Shule Foundation. That's S-H-U-L-E. And it's shulefoundation.org, correct?
Yes.
S-H-U-L-E, foundation.org. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. Thanks for listening this Thursday and every Thursday. One of the things I think about, because you weren't prepared and you weren't setting out to launch a not-for-profit, and here you are, a couple years later, and you've bought a home with an acre or two of land and your 11 bedrooms. So where's the funding coming from?
So we're renting the home, but the dream is to buy a home so that we have our own facility and we can grow it. We are, fortunately enough, in the last 3 years, I've had three key supporters that have been very, very helpful.
So these weren't all birthday presents from your 40th?
No, they were not.
Shoot.
A lot of it, but the first year and a half was self-funded.
And great for you.
And we just started, we've gotten the momentum now. You know, opening a nonprofit is tough in itself.
And abroad
is even really hard. Mm. And then, you know, I look like just another white girl who took a trip to a developing world. And
They're supermodels.
Want to give back, yes,
yeah,
right?
Or, so, you know, the Madonnas in the world.
I am no supermodel, no Madonna.
You're a superpower.
Why, thank you. But you have to prove yourself. And going back to what we said, we started on education, and really we wanted to build a different sort of school in the rural areas. So, but this, we took this detour, but it's still based on education. And I would say since we launched the Watoto Matani project, we have gotten some really great momentum and gotten in front of a lot of more people. So we do fundraisers. We're part of the Newman Foundation Challenge, which is launching on the 21st, which from the 21st of November till January 3rd, we're raising money. And the more money we raise, the more that we might be able to win prizes from the Newman Foundation. The organization that raises the most money will get $150,000 from the
Newman
Foundation.
That's great. So will there be information on your website?
Yes.
Shulefoundation.org,
yep.
S-H-U-L-E, foundation.org.
Yep. And,
is that up now?
That's up now, and we'll promote it also on our Facebook page, which is Shule Foundation, Instagram, Shule Foundation, and Twitter, Shule Foundation.
That's it?
That's it for now.
So that's incredible. So are the communities and government welcoming? Again, you said this twice, but I mean, again, here's an American person looking to make change. But I mean, you've ramped up in no time.
Yeah, we did. And the communities have been amazing. I am now the proud owner of one goat, five or six cocks, I think, and a couple of chicken. Because every time we bring a child home, the community just comes out and just gives gifts. So the community has been very welcoming. The government, we've partnered with, because you have to. You know, they're welcoming, but you don't really hear from them.
Well, it could be a good thing, right?
Which is
out of sight, out of mind.
Yes.
Now, the gentleman that you spoke about before, the young boy, is that the same person who didn't? No, this is another person.
Yes,
that didn't have the goods to really make it in school, and his parents were or parent was trying were trying to push him for education, and you realize that, you know, this kid, this teenage boy didn't have the goods, and he wanted to become a farmer.
Farmer.
And take it over, please.
So we part of the 27 kids that we took in, we took this kid, Mike, in. And Mike's a very, very funny kid. And as a huge, I have a huge belief in education, but sometimes not every kid is meant to be in school.
Anywhere in the world.
Right. You know, anywhere you go.
We all have different purposes, whether we realize them or not, right?
Not every kid is meant for formal education.
That's why there's radio.
Yes, there you have it, right? So, and Mike happened to be one of them. He happened to be one of them. And Mike was one of the first kids that went home. We settled him. And when we showed up, the grandmother, when we were talking about leaving him back there and everything, the grandmother was pushing for our support to send him back to school. So we sort of went back and forth on that. And Mike had always told, I just want to farm. Just let me be a farmer.
Hmm.
So against my true core of beliefs, I told the woman, I said, I will not fund this kid to go to school. It'll be a waste of our funds. The kid will go to school, he'll get caned, and he'll end up going back to the street.
Get caned?
Yes, because
still happens.
Yes, it still happens there, though it's against the law and it's not supposed to happen.
Not enforced.
It's not enforced. So we went back and forth, and I said, but this is what I'll do for Mike. If Mike stays home for 2 months, we will buy him a pregnant goat and 4 egg-laying chickens. So 2 weeks ago, Mike is the proud owner of a goat who is about to give birth to a couple of kids, I think, next week, and has now four egg-laying chickens.
Wow.
And he has started his own business.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Just like that.
Just like that. And that Mike was actually a simple fix.
Yeah,
he just really was a simple fix. And the kid is happy. The kid is so happy.
He's got purpose.
He has a purpose now.
He's got purpose, but he's a caretaker. Other people, animals, people are relying on him.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a means to make money, of course, because these animals are producing.
Yep. And we made the family sign a contract because no family member is allowed to sell those that livestock. That livestock is owned by Mike. And if Mike has any problems, he is to contact us. He's fortunate enough. He's one of few men in a house filled with women, and he has a very powerful grandmother. The grandmother is amazing. She's an extraordinary, extraordinary woman.
How much did this cost, the Shulay Foundation?
So this cost us about 80 U.S. dollars.
That's great.
Yeah, to do this.
But totally out of reach for...
For him.
Yes.
Yes.
And for his mother, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Grandmother.
Yes.
Wow. So talk about, we talked about this and the misconceptions earlier. We talked about this, but there are certainly, and we don't want to, you know, minimize the reality.
No.
What's going on over in Africa. But the reality is also the flip side.
Yes.
That there are many families that push for education and there are great schools over there. You know, there may be some trying circumstances by all means,
mm-hmm.
but I don't want to speak on this because you are the more expert than I am.
It's been very rare to meet a family that doesn't want their kids in school. Education and having a child in school is very important for parents over there.
Equally for women and is there any sexism within the family still?
So I have to say yes. Now, we own 20 acres of land in a village, so we spend a lot of time in the village as well. And a lot of the families we've encountered have been sending both their kids, boys and girls, equally back to school. But there are so many challenges when it comes to school, especially in the developing world. Though in Uganda, the education system is free, it's not actually free. There's an expectation of a uniform. There's an expectation of requirements, meaning pens, pencils, books, and all that, which a lot of families cannot afford. Then you're also sending kids to school where the teachers don't show up. And if they do, the teacher actually doesn't really have a much better educational level than the kids that they're teaching. And so it's a vicious cycle because a family is thinking, well, why am I going to send my kid to a school where they're not going to learn when the kid can stay home and
not
work?
Productive and be productive.
And be productive at work. So there's so many moving parts and components into this education problem that need to all be taken into consideration. And there are good schools, but the good schools cost money. And if you don't have a household income, you can't send your kid to school.
How much would a decent education cost?
Well, it's interesting because one of the kids we took home, this kid Daniel, we pay 15,000 shillings to send him to a government school. That's a couple of dollars, but that's 15,000 shillings the family does not have. So
Is that it for an entire school year?
That's for a term. So they have three terms. And the government school the kid's going to is actually a very good government school. So every term, the family is responsible of paying 2,000 shillings, and we pick up the difference. But we had this other kid, John, who we took home, who the government school in his area is horrible. There was also a private school in the area, which was built by whites, which was also horrible. So this kid really has no place to go in his area. So we have to bring him back and put him into a school near us. But with John, we're also trying to figure out, because formal education might not be the right path for John either. So, but he wants to make soap and jelly. So we might start a little business for John as well.
I think it's going to be right next to the goat and the chickens.
Absolutely, because they're actually from the same district.
There you go. Wow. All this was just resolved from, you know, seas away.
Yeah.
Wow. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. It really is. When you think about how one person, so many people think, oh, I can't make a difference. Why should I vote? Why should I do this? But you can.
You can make a difference in such
a short period of time.
Yes.
Jacqueline, that's just amazing. Mm-hmm. So when you show people, I don't know whether it's a PowerPoint or a presentation of some sort, what you've done, how much ground you gain in such a short period of time, are people like very impressed, taken aback, and say, okay, who do I make the check out to?
We're starting to get that because we're starting to get momentum to be in front of more people. And the cool thing is that we have these photos that we have of the kids prior to them entering the home and now. And the transformation, it cannot not inspire
it's palpable.
Someone. Yeah, you cannot not inspire
sure.
someone. So, and the cool thing is that we took the kids that pretty much have gone through every organization and have been resettled numerous times. And all the organizations, like when we first opened the doors, we'd send those kids back. I'd send those kids back to the street. They're never going to stay with you. And now you look at them and they're like, you know, teenage boys. We have teenage boys.
How do you, could you attribute this also to different methodology?
Yes.
Maybe a little bit more lax and permitting them to, or giving them more trust?
Yes, I think where our secret sauce is the little bit of the Western mentality thrown in there, which my staff has pushed me on until like the last couple of weeks when they're like, oh yeah, maybe this does work. Maybe the combination of love and trust and communication and, you know, punishments that fit a crime, per se, mm-hmm. Along with the approach of how you raise children in Uganda, the combination of both, I think, is what's key to our success. And because at the end of the day, I don't care where a child is born, all they want is love and to be heard.
I mean,
everybody wants to be heard.
Yeah. I mean, everyone wants to be loved, whether they admit it or not.
Yes.
You know, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it comes out in different forms. What about violence? You haven't talked about any violence. Is it very omnipresent?
Oh, there's violence, especially on the street, because when you first come to the street, you better show that you can take care of yourself. And so there's this word that means I beat you.
You're talking about kids?
Kids.
Okay.
And even adults, because the way people in the village want to deal with situations is basically through violence. And so there's this word, it's kukuba, right? And it's like, I beat you. And this is a word that you constantly, constantly, constantly heard when the kids first moved into the house. And there was a lot of fighting, a lot of fighting.
Is that intimidating for you?
No, it was not even intimidating. It was frustrating. Because when you see all the anger that these kids have, and fighting serves no purpose.
Hmm.
And
except for a release.
And it became a part of you kids aren't going to make it out in the real world if this is how you're going to deal with conflict. And even in the village, there was this guy in the village where a friend of mine lives. He got caught stealing. The community came out, beat him, and cut off his penis. And they wanted to leave him there to die. But that's how they deal with bad behavior.
So he's castrated and he lives.
He's castrated and we don't know what happened to him, actually. We don't know. It was a friend of mine. It was where she was living, and she sent me these photos, and I was like, "Are you kidding?" She's like, "That's how they deal with
Wow,
behavior.
In 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of work left to be done, of course.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But in such a short time, the Shulay Foundation has made incredible progress.
We have. I wake up some mornings and I can't believe it.
So I'm sure in addition to funds that you welcome, volunteers?
Volunteers. We're looking for tons and tons of volunteers. There's volunteer opportunities abroad, which would be great. There's volunteer opportunities here. You know, anything when it comes to especially university outreach, business outreach, looking for anything on the back end when it comes to websites, SEO.
SEO?
Yeah, you know, all that website talk.
Oh, well, you're talking
right.
Tech lingo here.
Tech lingo, which I don't know.
I thought we moved on to, like, corporate talk or something.
Which I don't have no idea about, but yes. So, yeah, we have, because as of now, it's, you know, here in the U.S., it's me doing the whole thing. So we're always looking for great people to want to get on board and become part of the Shulay family.
You know what's kind of fascinating, Jacqueline Wolfson, is that if you were to, you know, mention this to me or maybe to yourself, say 10 years ago, all right, think about this. You're going to be tasked with going over to Uganda and starting a nonprofit and renting a home and securing 20 acres, you said?
Yeah, 20 acres.
20 acres, and you'll be housing children and getting them off the street, stopping sniffing glue, getting them educated. I mean, you would be daunted, right?
Yes. I think if I thought about it that
yeah.
way, yes.
And it's actually kind of neat how it just kind of spawned out of a 40th celebration.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. You know what I did for my 50th?
Tell me.
Can't tell you.
Okay.
Jacqueline Wolfson, President and CEO of the Shulay Foundation. That's shulefoundation.org, shulefoundation.org, and also a very cool T-shirt.
Thank you. And you can buy the T-shirts online.
Oh, you can?
We can. Can
oh,
I
turn
show
around
the
for the camera. Yes.
So this is a Bella and Canvas T-shirt. You can buy them at Shulay Foundation on Teespring, or you can come to our website and click on and get your own Shulay Foundation. And all the proceeds of the T-shirt go to our education initiative.
All those boys and girls that you
yes.
heard and spoke about. So listen, we're off next week. Thank you very much for listening each and every Thursday. Have a great Thanksgiving. Eat till the buttons pop off, the zippers zip down, or whatever it takes. If you'd like me to speak at your school, college, or corporation, check out markfarrellmotivation.com for talks on overcoming adversity, mental health, anti-bullying, self-entitlement, and more. My name is Mark Farrell. Have a great day. The founder of the Progressive Radio Network is next. Gary Noe, enjoy.
Thank you.